Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Both guys, how awesome is God of War?
Oh, it is so good.
Pretty awesome.
It's pretty damn good. Now, it hoovered up a whole bunch of awards last year, kind of beat Red Dead Redemption 2 at the Game Awards and things like that. And basically, we just wanted an excuse to talk about it because it's one of the best games of the generation. So, there's all sorts of different things to talk about. We'll get to the combat and the gameplay stuff later. I guess at the minute, let's just open with some general thoughts on God of War, because you've just finished it, Ash. That was, you took a little bit of time.
I finished it a little bit ago, but yeah, very recently. And it was great.
It was really good.
I didn't think it was my sort of thing because I'd heard about it just being like the whole series being this big beat 'em up, smashy, violent game. And I was like, okay, that appeals to me, but I'm not like in a rush to play it. And then got to it, and it is so rich in lore and mythology and like this wonderful emotive narrative, as well as all the smashing and like puzzles and stuff as well. I just thought it was... It was just fantastic.
What was the thing that, because a lot of people, I think, because Josh, you hadn't played the original games either.
No.
Like, so it's like, what was the thing that put both you guys off the original that made you give this one a shot? Was it the more mature sort of approach to the advertising?
For me, it was. For me, it was the fact that it had like a story that was going to address not only Kratos, but like his role in the previous games and kind of recontextualize that. But for me, it was just the kind of spectacle fighting that the original God of Wars were built around. It's just, that has never been a genre that's sort of spoken to me. And I know it's like great and it's like people love Devil May Cry, and I quite love Devil May Cry, but it takes a special
buy the
something.
New one.
I will eventually, man. But it takes that something special for me to actually get into it. Yep. So when I saw that they'd kind of changed it around and not only brought a more mature approach to the storytelling, but also kind of tweaked the combat to be more personal and kind of over the shoulder and more intimate, I was like, this could be a game for me now.
Is that a similar thing, Ash, thought? Was it made you want to give this one a shot?
Literally, you beat me around the head with it.
That is a very good point. I didn't stop mentioning it all day, every day, around everyone until everyone had played it.
Yeah, but that's literally the main thing that, literally the main thing that drove me was Scott, like, talking about it so much and how passionate.
Then I got you to play Celeste and you hate it.
Oh, we don't talk about Celeste here.
Well, I do, but carry on.
I didn't hate it, I just didn't connect with it. But anyway, God of War, I did. And it was just hearing how, like, into it you were. I was like, well, I must give it a go and then see. And then it's literally gone up there in my top two games of all time. Like, I love it so much.
That and Colonial Marines.
Yeah.
Nailing
those
it.
Those two. Spot on.
The beauty of it as well is that it's made me want to go back and play the other games. Like, every time God of War 3 is on sale, because I played a bit of 2 mostly, but I never played 3 at all. So it's made me want to go back and actually give them a go, because I think it will make God of War 2018 even richer.
Yeah, they're weird. I mean, like, I was a huge fan of the originals, like, growing up and stuff, and they kind of sit in that same part of my brain as, like, Mortal Kombat or something, but I always thought that the Kratos was just kind of ridiculous as a character. It was like he accidentally killed his own family and then he's annoyed at the gods because of the thing that he did accidentally in a blind rage. It was always this like ridiculous sort of motivation. I have since gone back to God of War 3 remastered or whatever they call it, and they are just so different. They are very much like pick stuff up, rip these things in half, just have fun killing everything, but it does kind of, it gives you that foundation to be like, okay, even he regrets that side of himself, and even that's the stuff that he's trying to move on from. And at the very end of the new one, Atreus says something about, well, what do I need to do, what can I be, and Kratos just says, better, just be better than I was, to focus on the right things and fight for the right reasons, which is a good like kind of segue into some of the lore based stuff, because we're going to go full spoilers, by the way, if you haven't already guessed. It's a game from last year, the spoilers are everywhere. So one of the things that comes at the close of the story is the reveal that Atreus is actually Loki, which is obviously a major component in Norse mythology in general. What did you guys think of that stuff, that clearly he has a much bigger role to play in the future?
Exactly, that was the noise that came at me when it happened. I was like, is he? What the heck? I thought thought it was a really cool little twist on the end of it. I think I had spoiled some of it for myself because it had been out a little while. I knew about Faye being a giant.
Yes.
But I had no connection or clue that Loki was coming. So that kind of just absolutely came from left field. And I was like, we know that name. It's in all of the Thor movies.
Listen, that was always my thing. Like obviously Thor and Loki and Odin. I mean, like less so Odin, but Thor and Loki definitely. You've got like they're sort of popular because of Marvel.
Yeah.
Even though the versions in the MCU are completely different to the Norse mythology versions. Like the Loki in Norse mythology is kind of like going out with a horse and has sort of been with a horse for a while, had some kids with the horse, including a giant snake. But that might be something that they get to eventually. I don't know, to be honest, sorry. But still, it seems like they're sort of planting those seeds though going forward because one of the choice quotes from Corey Barlog, he said that they actually planned 5 more games, which he's now since walked back. And it seems that they maybe might just do like a tighter trilogy or something. Uh-huh. But what do you think of that, that they might do a massive epic thing?
Well, you can tell that as soon as you jump into God of War, there's not only like references to Odin and Thor, like those two big characters coming, they are referenced throughout the entire game, yet you never really see them except from Thor, right? The very end with his hammer and stuff.
Yes.
But then even stuff when you're in is it the Bifrost? I want to make sure I get my mythology terms right. And you're looking at the different map and you've got...
Possibly Yggdrasil, but carry on.
Maybe. Okay. I can't pronounce that, so I'm going to call it the Bifrost.
It's all connected.
Yes. You see the other realms that are on the map that you can't actually access. And I know for a lot of people, myself included at the time, that was a bit of a bummer that I could never actually go to them. But I love that you've got this such a rich world going forward. And I want to see literally every scrap of this. When I was playing this game, I was like looking at videos and analysis videos and people kept recommending Neil Gaiman's...
American Gods.
American Gods. Oh, and he did one Norse purely mythology. On Norse mythology. And
it's
I was
in
like,
my house.
Really?
I bought it today. It arrived. I was like,
thinking, Gaiman's I'm going to read that. And now I've got an excuse because I'm going to borrow it off Ash. Lend it off Ash.
Slash steal. Read as fast as possible.
But, I mean, I never will. But the fact that it got me interested at all to even pursue that, I'm like, yes, I want more of this world. I want it filtered through God of War.
So like you mentioned before about like recontextualizing. The thing that I love the most, because the older games were always like, Kratos is the center of everything. They reveal him to be the son of Zeus in the second one. And there's all that kind of stuff. It's very much his story. He's angry, therefore he's the most important thing, and that's it. But one of the things that I love in the new one is that you have this whole world of like different factions going on. There's all these different families at war. You have like Odin and Thor, the Aesir, that I think Odin, you know a little bit more about the lore than me.
Aesir's just gods. So
So like, but they're the ones that like murdered the giants. But all that stuff happens beforehand, and you're going to Jotunheim to spread Faye's ashes. But it seems like all those things have already happened beforehand. Did you guys like that in terms of like a framing device? Because for me, I love that stuff. I like the idea of reducing a character and going like their story is important to us, but you have all this wider stuff that you can sort of pick from. Is that more enticing than this like big power fantasy thing from the first games?
For me it is, because you do feel like an outsider sort of like just coming into this world sort of brand new, and you're from a different place. And I feel like that was kind of necessary. You're just like a cog in this wider, humongous mythology. And I thought that was great. And you're kind of like tearing it down in the fact that you're seeing either the remains or what still remains of like this universe was like cool and like interacting with it. I thought it was good that it didn't exist around you, if that made sense.
But it's like, was that the stuff that is more appealing too, like to you? Because then it's like you get a way more personal story.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like being thrown into this, I feel like they had to do it from having the first three games and then this one and going, right, you're being thrown in the deep end if you haven't played these first three ones as well. So it's very much, I'm in this world, I don't know what any of it means. There's all these factions warring, like the Dark Elves and the Light Elves figuring their stuff out. I thought that was a really good way of just being like, okay, here, you're in this world, this is what's happening. And then to seed so many little things that link back to like the real world interpretations and everything, it was incredible. I thought it was really, really clever way of doing it, both new audiences and old audiences and creating a story that actually feels meaningful.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you guys feel like you missed anything by not playing the old ones? Or is this, you can't just go into this?
Not really. Obviously, there are references to it more than I expected, to be honest. I expected it to be kind of a straight reboot, but there are references to the other games which made me want to go out and play it. But I feel like you get enough in those things that I had no real personal attachment to, like when he goes back and gets his weapons, like the Blades of Chaos. That should have meant nothing to me because I've played none of the other games, really. But I still felt emotional in the moment and still felt this history behind you. I think they just do such a good job of making the world feel rich, even if you aren't quite acquainted to it. The fact that you spend so much time with Kratos and Atreus, like just talking about their history and stuff and like kind of getting into that a little bit, I think that does enough to kind of get you up to speed to make those emotional beats hit.
Yeah, because it's like, I can't imagine going into it like this being your first God of War. Because like the thing that I love the most is that it plays off how stupid and over the top those old ones were. And I'm speaking as a fan, but they were just so ridiculous. ridiculous. But now you have, like I said, like you have this Kratos that sort of kind of regrets what he went through, and like they play off like his actually like kind of pretty much has like an anger problem. They play that off with the rage meter, and it spikes when Atreus like gets the kill wrong or whatever at the very beginning, and little things like that that they sort of recontextualize. What do you think they'll do, or what did you like about Kratos in terms of the character, and where do you see him going? Because a lot of the stuff that they do with him in this one is playing off what he used to be, and now that he's reached this sort of like sense of peace within himself at the end of it, or at least I think he has. It's like, where do they even go from here, kind of thing?
I don't know. I think seeing him and the way that he's played out, I think like Josh said, you get all of you get all this context from the way that the story is set up, and the rage meter and everything, watching this real sense of control and tightness in him. I think it's portrayed perfectly to give you that this was a very over the top character previously that has been controlled in some sense now.
Because I like that. Well, are you going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, I agree. And I think that there is so much more scope to explore that character more. Because for the most, he has a really good arc in this game. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, he's still a very much reserved, angry man who doesn't want to open himself up. And he is more reserved than I expected to. I thought he would slip back into that father role quite quickly. But you spend the entire game more or less breaking that down. And then at the end, him and his relationship with Atreus is finally where it needs to be. And I think that is just a great jumping off point for the next game.
It's like, I kind of wonder what they're going to do. Because we can talk about Atreus as well. Like I grew to like love his like role in the gameplay. Yeah. Like he becomes really reliable. You get used to this like hammering on the archer, but and he calls out different threats.
The
and everything.
Arrow's always like shoot the whole time. I was standing back, just going shoot.
Yeah, like sometimes he can just like get them into that state where you can just finish them off with like I'm going to call it a fatality, but you know what I mean. Like there's that kind of stuff. But it's like something like Atreus, is this inevitably his eventual story? Like are we getting to the point where we're going to hand that off?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yes. I hope so. I mean, maybe you might think differently because you've sort of more of a connection to Kratos throughout the history than I have, but I think it's definitely Atreus' story. Even in this one, like he's Atreus is part of this world in a way that Kratos can never be, if that makes sense.
That's good.
He is sort of he is Norse mythology essentially. He's literally Loki. You know, I feel like the baton will be passed at some point, whether or not Kratos like dies or something.
Oh, no. I don't know. I think for it to be Atreus and Kratos is again this whole parallel to Zeus and Kratos before, so it's always been about fathers and sons. So it's going to be about fathers and sons again, and we've seen the son side with Kratos, and now he is the father. So I think we have to work through their relationship a bit more, and then it's going to come full circle and just be Atreus again.
I do kind of think, like I said, like even as a fan, that like they've pretty much Sony Santa Monica and Corey Barlog and the general feel of the game. Like there's a whole chunk in the middle. The reason that I love it so much is like it is all that commentary on the older games, but they have that whole thing where like Atreus realizes he's a god and he just goes off and he becomes way more nihilistic and he's just killing everybody. He ends up killing, I forget the name of the two twins.
Modi, I think he killed.
Yes. And he's like, just kicks him off like a ledge. And for me, knowing the history of the franchise, that was them, as far as I'm concerned, that's them literally addressing the mentality that was in the original games. Yeah. Where like, just because you're a god, you think you can go off and do all these different things.
Yeah.
And I love that sort of commentary. But that's the thing, because they're playing off that established idea of Kratos, like, I wonder what they do if they minimize that. Like, for me, the direction that they went with it, like, it is so fascinating because you still have Kratos. The more art piece he becomes with himself, he can become okay with dying or something, but then I wonder if Atreus is at the front of it, then it's just another action.
Well, it's like what both you and Ash said there. I love the theme of family that drives it. Yeah. It's sort of like the sins of the father or whatever, and you got that in the other games to what I can gather. Like,
oh,
whoa!
God, the studio just fell apart.
The studio is falling apart.
Kratos is coming in. He's heard that we're not happy with him. The people on the audio side won't know what the hell that is, but the video side can see us being attacked by pieces of foam.
That's exactly what happened.
Carry on.
What was I saying? Something about family. The themes of family are like they drive it, and even in the other games you had like Kratos going against his own father and stuff, and I loved that. Even though I hadn't played them, I loved that moment where Atreus kind of switches, and you see that happening here, like as if he was going to go down the same path. And I love the parallels between not only the previous games but between Thor and Odin and Thor and his children and stuff, and even between like Baldur and stuff. The family is such a important part of this, and I love that they're essentially just these big familial squabbles in this giant mythological plane. Like, that's awesome, and I love the sort of weight and the kind of, I don't know, the tragedy of it. And I think that's enough to go for. Even if Kratos becomes more at peace with himself, there are families all around him that are not going to go down the same route.
Because I guess that ties into the ending thing as well. Because when you finally get to the top of it's in Jotunheim, right? The final mountain. Yeah. You look at the big mural, and it shows the big mural of Atreus holding what looks like a dying Kratos. Mm-hmm. Although they cleverly carve off the things that would like let you see that it's him. But we can kind of segue into like one of the fan theories for a bit, because one of the prevailing fan theories, because it ties into real world Norse mythology, is that Kratos is actually the world serpent, because Freya talks about the world serpent Jormungandr just arriving in the game world at some point, just appeared everywhere and had, you know, sent the ocean scattering and all that kind of stuff. What do you guys think of that? That at some point in the future, Loki births, I don't know, Kratos becomes the world serpent and gets sent back in time to become the serpent.
Can I ask a question? Because yes. I am a fool and I don't quite understand what the world serpent's crack is, or how he is, or how he is becomes, or how this could happen.
He's just a big snake, basically.
He's a massive snake.
He's one of the giants. He's one of the Jotun. I'm not sure how it plays out in the game specifically, because he is just there. Mm-hmm. But I think in the mythology side of it, he's technically Loki's son.
Yes.
And then gets punched in the face by Thor and sent back in time.
Yeah.
At Ragnarok. Uh-huh. So that's how he kind of like just ends up there. But he's technically one of the giant's children.
Because in real world Norse mythology, if I get this right, I think, at some point in the future, Ragnarok happens, Thor and the serpent have this massive duel that apparently is so epic and so intense or whatever that it fractures the world tree, displacing time, and that sends the world serpent back in time to before his own birth.
Yeah.
Which would line up with God of War, because in God of War, Freya says that the world serpent just arrived one day and it's like placement was out of nowhere and it sent the oceans and that's why the world's all flooded and everything at the beginning. But the thing that I think ties into Kratos is that the design of the world serpent, he's this giant white serpent with flecks of red on him and he also has like a little beard and he says when you first see him that he recognizes Atreus.
Yeah.
But we don't know how far in the future that is before he gets sent back and whether the battle broke his mind or whatever.
Yeah.
But do you think they'll go down that route? Because for me, I was saying to Ash, like, I think the whole visualizing that is like so crazy.
That, I mean, you just describing it to me right now, I barely grasp it, to be honest. But I mean, it would be awesome. I think what I loved about this God of War is that it had, like you said, Ash, like it kept it personal whilst this entire like thing was happening around it. And I love the idea of like Ragnarok and the end of the world and all this crazy stuff happening. That might get a little bit unwieldy in like a video game potentially. It could be awesome to explore, but I'd worry you perhaps lose the intimate, personable.
Kotaku talking about like the way that they might see it going forward, where Loki obviously recognizes his heritage and realizes that he's also one of the giants. So then there's the whole thing with the giants and their placement as we know it in the game, where we come across that massive like field and they're all dead or whatever in Jotunheim. But the way that they got there was that they were being chased by the Aesir and they went through the world tree or whatever, and some of them ended up there. So there's kind of like a Kung Fu Panda 2 style revelation that there's actually some giants still alive somewhere. And yes, I'm dropping Kung Fu Panda 2 references because one of the best animated trilogies of all time. But that's the whole thing, that there could still be some giants out there. Yeah. And then you would have Loki would go rally the giants and go up against Odin and the rest of the gods. And then you have something that kind of ties back into the old school games. Do you guys want that? Because I personally don't. I don't want it to get that
I feel like
big.
I've just been hit around the face with a load of information.
Kung Fu Panda 2 coming at you.
That's what's on my mind. So you think that we're going to have giants coming out from the secret...
They're
secret
somewhere.
Place.
I'm just saying they're somewhere.
But there's other theories about where the giants could come from. But there's lots of people saying that the giants could come back. The one is that Faye's ashes will...
Yep.
Salt Bay. Faye's ashes will re-sort out Jotunheim and lift a spell that might have been put on them.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, because Tyr might have like done some sneaky business to hide them from everyone. Mm-hmm. The other option is that they're all already dead, because Ragnarok is a piece of weird interdimensional time all over the place thing.
Yeah.
So basically everything has already happened and they're going through it again in different areas.
Okay.
It's weird.
In terms of
it's
like
weird.
Sheer scale though, do you want something that, or would you like something that, like I said, like kind of moves away from the personal story to do the big finale type thing, or the big middle chapter kind of thing, where you have, you know, Loki and the giants versus Odin and the rest of the gods?
It's got to gear up to get there. I think we're gonna see Ragnarok, like that's what's gonna happen, and that it means fighting the big Aesir in the sky.
God of War 3 started with that, like in terms of the titans and the gods, and it's like, for me, that's the stuff that I think they've meaningfully moved away from, but I guess they can still do it if they earn it the right way.
That's it. I think you can certainly build up towards that, and that'll be such a killer climax. But I do like the idea of starting out relatively small with God of War 1 and then getting to that point, whether it's 3 or 5 games down the line. Is cool. And I think they have the basis to sort of seed it, so it won't just feel like, oh, we're going to do a big action blockbuster now with all this crazy time travel shenanigans and a big snake, whoa!
Yeah.
And I think they can pull it off, but I think it'll take a lot of build, but the mythology is so rich and it is there.
Yeah, plus I think if they did do that stuff, you would care way more about everybody involved in that battle this time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think an important thing to say is Freya's involvement in the first
one.
Just
going to segue into Freya.
Oh, segue.
A little
there
bit
we go.
Of a Freya.
But yeah, I think Freya's involvement in this first game and that she's seeded as this next big bad is important because it's kind of like maybe we're going to diverge into a more motherhood sort of angle.
Yeah.
Because we've had fatherhood and being a son and all that sort of thing, sins of the father. Mm-hmm. If we diverge into Freya's experience with Baldur and as well her connection with Atreus, because she is really like, hey, I'm going to help you, you nice
she
little
boy. Like overly protective mother throughout it. Yeah,
I think that would be a really, really interesting way of playing it. And there's lots of other figures and goddesses in sort of Norse mythology that would link into that really nicely.
Because one of the things at the very end where she literally says, like, you know, just kill me instead. Like, I'll happily lay down my life to spare, like, her son. But obviously, Baldur still dies. In real Norse mythology, you were telling me that... What's-her-face, Freya goes down to talk to Hela and tries to make a deal to resurrect Baldur.
Yeah.
So that might be something that they do in the sequel.
I think that would be really interesting if they did do that. The death of Baldur is the incitement of Ragnarok, though. Like him dying, the Fimbulwinter started, Ragnarok's going to happen. But before that is when they go down to Hel. Mm-hmm. She's called Hela in the comics. She's just called Hel. Like, Hel in Hel.
Okay.
So they give her the same name, which is confusing. But yeah, they go and talk to Hel, and then she's like, everyone's got to cry for him, otherwise we're not bringing him back.
His stipulation is that all of existence has to cry at once, I guess, to try and bring him back.
They'll have to get the tears flowing. And then there's one giantess who many believe is Loki in disguise that does not cry. And that is why Baldur cannot be brought back.
Okay.
But I don't know how this is going to tie in at all unless they just go for the whole giant angle and the giants are like, everyone's dead.
Norse mythology is so wild.
Oh, mate, you need to go see the six-legged horse that like Loki gets with to make his kids because I don't think they'll do that unless they get a trace with the horse.
I want to do that. Yeah, sure.
That's the thing. It's like, how much do they go down that route of just like the complete absurdity of it? Because they've done crazy god stuff before. Mm. So like maybe. Actually, we can kind of segue a little bit into, Rach had a whole fan theory about Faye's real purpose in the franchise, because she's like in Midgard and she's one of the last protectors of where the giants really are, which is why Baldur comes knocking and you think it's for Kratos, but it's actually for her.
Yeah.
That she's actually protecting the rest of the giants. But Rachel's whole twist was that because Faye's with Kratos and like trying to set down these specific trees to be cut down to commemorate her, in death she actually triggers the war between the giants and the rest of the gods and everything, and that she was the last person you know, protecting them before the war can go forward. What do you think of that? Because I love Faye's positioning in the first God of War. I love that she left you all the little runes and where to go. I like that she's the one that has the big wall and where the runes at the very end of it as well. Yeah. What do you see? I don't know. Do you like them inverting that?
I really don't know, because I do love the lush little note that the first game ends on, where you do find out that she's been ushering you down this route for so long.
She was like watching over you the whole time, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I like that more. It's just more tender.
Oh, like,
give Atreus and Kratos some like love in their life, you know, please help. But yeah, obviously she has like a huge role to play going forward, and I think it would be a cool way to invert it. I think the best thing that this game could do is just make everyone's morals more grey.
I love
that they're kind of getting into that in the first game, especially if we're going to have Freya as the big bad. Like, that would be awesome.
We can also talk about Tia, because and again, that theory that I just described, is a whole video on that you can go watch if you check out the What Culture Gaming channel. But also, Tia, the sort of like traveling interdimensional dude, you eventually find his like underground, it's not like a lair, but I guess it's
his
like this
lair.
Room of his treasures. I'm trying to think what you call it. It's like his like fancy room full of all his treasures and things that he's found. And he has this big board that's like been carved out with like he's in the middle of it, and you have like the Omega symbol in the corner, the God of War symbol. And then you have like there's like a Celtic rune and a Shinto shrine symbol. Mm-hmm. And then the other one's like an Egyptian like Eye of Horus or Eye of Anubis, one of the two. And it's like, do you think that they'll do that stuff going forward? Because Cory Barlog's already said the next game will be Norse still. But then to flesh the franchise out, do we then see Kratos and everybody go into different mythologies?
What I would like is a trilogy set in this. I want them to see out Fimbulwinter, I want them to see out Ragnarok, and I want all that to play out, and then maybe the trilogies going forward can be in other mythologies with different people, maybe not always Kratos, but he is obviously a really big part of this. But yeah, I think if they want to expand the franchise, then after we've had our three, here, then I'll be happy.
What do you think, Josh?
I'm with Ash with a slight caveat. I think you should keep it Norse, but the fact that Ragnarok's happening and there's time and space is all over the place.
It's going to be kind of...
I think there could be space to pull in sort of figures from these other mythologies like into it. Like, Kratos crossed over, so why can't other people? Not necessarily from like his past or whatever, but I like the idea of like these realities sort of merging or fracturing into one another, if that makes sense. I think that would be cool, just to get like a different perspective on it in like, I don't know.
I love the idea of like, because I like the idea that he wanders out of Greek mythology and wanders into Norse mythology, that it's all on one big earth. Yeah. Like, that's kind of crazy, but it kind of makes it like an identifiable element of the franchise. But yeah, one of the, I did the whole video thing on this too, but like the Shinto worship, there's a whole dragon god of sea and storms. And I'm like, just give me that. Just give me a whole fight against this giant dragon god. But that might be a way for them to sort of flesh more stuff out. But I just wonder about the longevity of someone like Kratos, if they're already making all these kind of mature steps towards rounding him out. Like, what do you even really do with him in the long run if it's not just more of the same?
I think it's just going to be massive like self-sacrifice in it. That's where it's going to have to lead, because of all the death that he's given, all this, that, and the other, the lessons he's teaching Atreus. It's going to have to be one big
you telling me they're not just going to settle down in the cabin like and chill out in domestic bliss? And
that's kind of what they were at the beginning.
I watched that.
Yeah, I watched the crap out. I play the crap out of that. Yeah. Cooking Mama, but with
God of War. Oh my God, imagine boy.
That's kind of what they're doing at the very beginning.
Yes. But even then, but Kratos is no daddy at that point.
He's not, to be fair. He's got a lot more cooking to do. He also
needs his daddy meter does improve throughout the game.
Yeah, it definitely goes way up. He also needs to remove all the weapons in the house, because there's some stuff that they've been sitting on. Actually, we can talk about gameplay stuff too, because we touched on it at the beginning, but like, where do you see them going from here? Because for me, they have one of the most fleshed out skill systems and animation. Like, everything felt so complete. Like, by the end of it, I was like, I'm very good at this combat, and I know that you've beat all the Valkyrs as well.
Yes,
so it's like, you
have
to get to a certain point.
I platinumed God of War. I'm
the only one in the office who's who has, I think.
I know.
Even me and Josh gave up.
Because I'm great. I killed all the Valkyries.
What?
Valkyries. That's also something to talk about Freya, because she was a Valkyrie at one point, wasn't she?
Oh, sure.
And had her wings taken away. So her becoming full fire and brimstone Valkyrie throughout maybe two or three of these games would be good. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'd like it if they sort of play on that and give you like a main boss battle that is as hard as that optional Valkyrie boss battle was.
Oh my God, that Valkyrie was a...
Yeah.
She was a dick.
That word.
That's where I got up to. Just didn't even finish it. I thought, it's not for me.
I tried going back to it, but I wasn't... It was after Sekiro, and I was like, well, maybe now that I've conquered Sekiro, I can get back to it. But the timings are all off and whatever.
It took me like a good 3 hours just sitting there going, combos.
It's a hell of a thing. I think, but yeah, in terms of what do you think they'll do for the gameplay? How do you see them? Where do they even go from here?
More of the same. More of it. Just more.
They keep the Leviathan axe, do you think? Because the big thing was that they put the Chaos, Blades of Chaos to the background. You have the Leviathan axe. Yeah. Kratos used to have a massive sword, I write down the name, called the Blade of Olympus, and this big blue blade that he had in God of War 2, which I don't think anyone ever used, because it was always like, back then it was always like the chains were the coolest thing. But do you see him like them giving him a new weapon, or did he keep the Leviathan axe? What would you like to see?
I'd like to see them keep like the one or two weapons, because I love the dexterity of it, I suppose. There's so the versatility of it. There's so much you can do with that Leviathan ass, did I just say?
You don't want to wield the Leviathan ass.
You don't.
I think he did.
There's so much you can do with it, though. But I'd
recording
like
at five,
see,
yeah.
I kind of like to see them mod it in the future, like making it transform into other things. Maybe it has even more versatility, like, so you don't just have to use it in the same kind of way. Maybe like it's maybe like the trick weapons in Bloodborne, so you can sort of like transform it mid-combat or something. Something like that would be cool, because I do love how personal that axe becomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you rely on it. Because you can recall so it. Like, exactly. Yeah. It feels so good. So why mess up a thing that's already good?
It's true. Apparently, it took them forever to get the physics right on it as well. Because they had to program, like, the path that it takes back through the world. And then sometimes you can, I don't know if you guys realized, like, you probably did, but you can kind of glitch it. Like, sometimes you recall it.
Smack them, like, it's three times. Like,
But, like, it'll go through, like, the wall or it'll just come from, like, behind you, even though you've got your back to something.
I once left it, like, somewhere else. Then went in my boat and drove, like, rode all the way across the map. I was waiting for it to come back.
I do love that it takes longer, though. It's that bit in Endgame where he's just put his arm out. Like, give me a minute. It's very slowly going back. I think in terms of abilities and stuff as well, like they had, like, you can block, you can fight unarmed, and there's a lot of grapples and stuff. I just wonder what they do. I think maybe they give Atreus like a bigger role.
I think that's the only way they can do it is more bow and arrow stuff, because lots of the melee fighting swords and things, I think, is covered. I think if I personally don't want to see them add any more weapons or do any more changing
things. Just flesh out more stuff.
I like the axe as it is. I think if they're going to do it, have like Brock and Sindri just smack it once and then like give it some upgrades and stuff. But I don't know.
Hilarious how many times they did that.
Oh, literally just bop.
Now it's better.
Yeah, but no, I think keeping it as those is great because you've got the option of the Blades of Chaos. I think maybe get rid of those.
I would totally get rid of them.
Yeah, and then maybe bring in another one. Maybe that forge that into like a really big, heavy-handed weapon, and then you've got the axe as like, woo, throw it.
Because it's a weird beat because like the whole thing when he goes back to it, I love the thematics that he has to embrace his old self to go and save Atreus, and I love all that stuff. But by the end, like after that, he sort of just keeps them, and then even like post credits when he's reached this new like sense of like, I know Atreus, you need to be better and whatever. Like either he's keeping them on him because he's like, you know, claiming them and owning them and whatever. But like, yeah, I'd be totally fine if they just ditched it because I mean everybody thought going into it that it was only going to be the Leviathan axe anyway.
His whole thing was like, I'm not going to hide who I am anymore, wasn't it? And then he had all like the chain scars. So like we see him. We see him. The blades as well.
I don't know if it works in the actual lore, but I'd like to see him melt the Blades of Chaos down somehow and forge something else out of
that's what I literally just said.
Yeah, the dwarves can totally do that. Well, you said tap it and
you said tap it, Ash. I said melt it down.
Watch this back.
Just be ignoring everything Ash has said. I know what I don't want to see.
Go on.
More stat-based armor, which I like the combat and stuff, but fanging about with that and pulling
plus 5% fire damage.
This is the thing with the Valkyries. Yes. You really, really need a runic like setup. The whole way you're going to deal damage to them is a fully runic setup. I had not got a runic setup. I've gone like for a full...
That's why it took you 3 hours, mate.
Yeah, literally, because I'd done a whole strength setup that had very specific things that I wanted to use for it and just like upgraded it as much as possible. Then got in there, I was like, freaking hell. But how different they go and how hard it is to then rejig everything.
It's a strange thing because they didn't really cover it too much in the lead up to release, or at least I didn't cotton onto it too much. But like, yeah, they have like a loot system in there, and I like the visual, like I don't know, changing the way that he looks. You get these massive shoulder pad pieces of armor, and like the mist armor looks kind of weird.
The Niflheim stuff is great.
Yeah. So like much. I do like the fact that you can kind of like mix it up. But yeah, like I don't know, do you want like a continuation of that or something more defined?
I think it's because there was so much of it and so much variations of everything. I did like that there was three avenues you could go down, but maybe mixing them together a bit more would be beneficial, so you could have a strength and runic setup and this, that and the other, because it did very much lead into sets. I kept buying sets thinking I was going to get an achievement for like having put all my
sets.
Yeah,
usually you would. That's an RPG mindset.
I was like, oh, I'll get all those three, they match, put Atreus in the one as well. Where's my achievement?
Father and son.
Yeah.
Because you were saying like towards the end when you were doing the Valkyrie fights that you were spamming, it was like there was that one tornado attack that you
you just spam like the runic attacks. I was doing the same things, which kind of, it's got to the point where I was not experimenting with the combat at all. The game had finished, to be fair. I was only fighting these Valkyries in a couple procedurally generated area and stuff like that. But I just got into such a rut at the end where I was spamming the same combos, doing the same things in that. It potentially my fault, but the game didn't encourage me to do anything different because that was the most efficient tactic.
To be fair as well, like one of the qualms of like all the like constant criticisms of the original games were always that it always fell back on square, square, triangle, light, heavy, over and over and over again. And I thought that was the first thing I did when I got the Blades of Chaos in this one. I was like, I wonder if they still have the same animation.
Right.
And they did. It's certainly you have to unlock it, but like near enough. But that's the thing. It's like moving forward, like if we kind of fell into those ruts a little bit of like, you know, everything being stuck, grindy or whatever.
And I think you can make it tighter as well. There were some moves that were great in theory that I just never used, like the differences in the stance that was like great in theory.
Oh, I love that stuff.
But I never actually used
really?
It. It just felt like it was slightly too long to pull off, if that makes sense.
Right.
I had to consciously think about it in the moment, which I don't think you should have to do. You should just sort of come come naturally.
Oh, what do you think? Because I love that stuff.
To be fair, I tried a couple of the stance things, but because I'd gone for a proper strength setup, I didn't need to do it that often.
Because so I think, like, I don't know if it's because I come, because you say you don't play fighting games very much, whereas like a stance switch is like, out of something of like a staple in fighting games ish. And so like I liked when you could sort of extend your combo by just pausing that little bit in between each hit. And so I started kind of factoring that in. I completely forgot they even had that in the game. But it's like, that's a way to sort of flesh it out a bit more.
Yeah, no, it was a neat thing to add. It was a neat thing to add. Just and then you've got the choice of using it or not. So what I was trying to get out then.
You do. So, okay, so we can do, for the very end, I guess we might as well do wish list things. What is one thing that we want to see? Because for me, it's going to be story stuff. I want to see more Kratos fleshed out. Even though I think he's at a pretty good spot, I think if they actually did like a really shocking about face and just kind of jumped a few years in the future and maybe just have him in a way lesser role, but I would totally be fine with that.
Wait, you mean like more and like a good 10 years or like...
I don't know how far I want to go because I don't want to take him out of the running altogether. I ostensibly want to do with him what the fans want to do with Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell, which is put him in an advisory role and let you play as someone else.
Yeah.
And so if you keep Kratos in there, he's still, you know, he's still helping you, he's still available.
Does that turn him into Marcus Fenix from Gears of War?
Well, that's what you want to steer clear of. Although in that, JD Phoenix sucks and like Marcus Fenix is just, that's the thing. He's kind of just in the background, but everyone always just keep wanting to play as him. It depends how they handle Atreus. Yeah. But if they give him a nice moveset, he's already like beloved by the fandom. Like everyone like loves Atreus anyway. I forget what you call the actor, it's like Sonny Solshek or something. He's a great performer. He's like a great dude. So I think you probably could hang more of the game on him, but what would you guys like to see?
Ooh, I think if I agree that would be a great idea, but for me, I'd like it to play as Kratos. What I'd want them to do is kind of involve Atreus more, like the Sparks levels in Sonic, Sonic Spyro, where you have him, like you just play
shocked
as him.
Shocked face.
You just play as him for a little bit, for like a little, to rescue my dad level. Like, that's what I want. I just want to see how they, for me, it's just all the nerd stuff. Like, I really want to see how they invert mythology again, because this whole thing has been a massive inversion of what you expect from actual Norse mythology. Like Baldur being an absolute cock, like he's not supposed to be in there.
And Thor being a villain, and
like I love the way that they've spanned all that and then taken the things that have inspired those stories and then done them a different way. Like like the bringing of Ragnarok and Kratos causing it. It's all of his actions throughout the game that actually bring it on. Like him liberating the ship and driving it through Helheim is one of the causes of Ragnarok, because the whole thing is Ship of the Dead comes out.
And then like ultimately it's like, that's the thing he's going to have to grapple with, is that his position, his role in any of these mythologies is always just going to lead to ruin.
Exactly.
Which might end up him killing himself. I'm just saying.
Deep. But I want to see more of that. I want to see them invert it. I want to see this, that and the other. The outcome of Ragnarok is two humans survive. So I hope that something different happens there than just a man and a woman. It's like Adam and Eve.
It can be Nolan North and Troy Baker, and it'll be fine. Josh, what do you want to see?
Literally everything Ash just said.
Not me.
Nothing you said. Everything Ash just said. No, I want to see them double down on like the relationship between Thor and Odin and Atreus and Kratos. I want to see them going ahead. There's more themes of family set against this grand end of the world backdrop. That's good for me. I want to see Kratos punch a snake through time.
He is the snake man.
No, he can punch himself through time, which causes him to become the snake. And also, if we're ripping off mythology as well as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, why don't you just get Korg and Meek in there? They could be pretty good additions to this
franchise. That's Rock and Sindri.
There you go. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, but just turn them into Korg and Meek. And
are you all right? We passed the 5 p.m. mark. Josh just started to fold into himself.
I just didn't have anything more to add. That you two brilliant summed it up.
Thank you.
What a next game could be. So I've got nothing but banter over here, I'm afraid.
That is also very good, because the stuff that they've laid down is, I think if he even did more of the same, it would still be sweet. Like the fact that we love it so much is because the meat and potatoes of it are just so much fun.
It's so good. It's just so good. I keep thinking about it and smiling, because I just think about everything that ties into it is amazing. I want to see more monsters as well. I want to see different monsters. I want to see different things brought up. And if that means they go to different realms or start off somewhere else, or the ones in Idrisil, I want to see them go to the other ones that we haven't seen.
Asgard
and the other ones I don't know of,
but yes, either way though, you guys let us know what you think down in the comments. And also if there are any other games that you'd like us to sort of dissect in this way, any sort of games that have sequels that are on the horizon or whatever, let us know. For now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello, goodbye.
I'm Josh Brown.
Hello, goodbye.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.